Are you ready for more independence as a financial advisor? Consider the RIA model. Schwab Advisor Services has helped thousands of advisors make the move. To find your path, start with Schwab at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths today.
Good evening and welcome to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. No, I am not Dave Schrader. You've probably figured that out by now. I am Tim Dennis. It's official, folks. The man flu has taken Dave Schrader. He's not dead. He's on his back, flat on his back. And although that may be good for the wife, it's not good for him. No. He will be in Arkansas this weekend. However, he's needed a little bit of time to try to recover. So I'll be taking the show today and tomorrow. And he will be back on Monday for Supernatural News and Parashare. And so I will take the helm today and tomorrow, and we'll go from here. So we've got a couple of great shows for you today and tomorrow, and we'll head into the weekend where this weekend the Minnesota Vikings will defeat the New Orleans Saints. And I got to take umbrage on Monday with somebody on the air about the fact that he says the Vikings are one and done. It's a personal issue. We'll leave it for Parashare. Where the Vikings will defeat the New Orleans Saints. I'll have a great weekend. I know I will. I'm already calling it this weekend, as are many sports outlets. But again, this isn't a sports show. It's a paranormal show. We'll bring our guests on, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment and get their opinions, too. Because you know why? Dave's not running the show this weekend. I am. So we can talk a little sports, too. Why not? Our guests for today, and actually, if you want to see Dave this weekend in Arkansas, you can go to darknessevents.com. That's the other announcement I have, darknessevents.com. You can still get your tickets. He'll be down there with Sean Paul from Intrigue Theater. Again, go to darknessevents.com. I'm going to do it along with you here, darknessevents.com. And be sure to check out Dave. He'll be, I believe, at the... is it the Crescent Moon Hotel? Is that where he'll be? Yes, the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, this weekend. And he'll be down there with Sean Paul and the rest of the gang from Intrigue Theater. He'll be doing a couple of talks down there this weekend. Get your tickets down there to go see Dave and hang out with Intrigue Theater this weekend. It'll be a great time. And even though Dave's a little under the weather, he's saving up the energy, and he will be happy to see you guys and meet and greet and shake babies and kiss hands and all that other stuff. So that'll be happening this weekend down in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. So there you go. Excited to have our guests on for tonight. We have a good show and actually kind of a creepy show tonight on Beyond the Darkness. Our guests for tonight are Elijah Buchholz and Sean Holland. They're from Apex Paranormal in Overland Park, Kansas. Let's bring them in now to the show. Good evening, guys. And right away, we're going to go non-paranormal. Let's get your predictions for the playoff game, the big playoff game, which I can't stop talking about. Go ahead, Elijah. I don't even know if you're into sports, but hit me with it.
Yeah. Listen, I'm kind of second-thinking the show, you bringing up football, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but We're actually from Kansas City.
Yeah, I know, and you had a rough weekend last weekend. I saw that. Yeah.
And Sean's got terrible taste in football, so I don't know if he really care what he thinks, but he's a Cowboys fan. But
what?
You know,
how can you be a Cowboys fan from Kansas?
I'm not from Kansas. That's the thing. I'm not from Kansas. I'm not from Texas either.
Where did you grow up that you're a Cowboys fan?
Oh my gosh! I'm a Cowboys fan since the '90s. I grew up in Missouri, but I, you know.
Okay, so why aren't you a Rams fan then?
Oh,
Rams aren't. Are there any Rams fans?
No, there aren't really.
Yeah, is that a thing?
Yeah. Sean just has no excuse, does he?
No, not at all.
Not really.
Well, yeah.
So before people get up in arms and start emailing me and telling me, this isn't a sports show, Tim, I hate sports. go ahead and give me your predictions for the Vikings-Saints game. I can't wait. Tell me my Vikings are going to get slaughtered this weekend like everybody else has told me. You can do it. Go ahead.
Well, I'm kind of a secret Vikings fan, so.
Oh, cool.
I'm cheering them on. I think the Saints are overrated. I think the Vikings will win.
Oh, I love you, Elijah. Sean?
Well, thank you, Tim.
I'm going to, you know what? Usually I go against everything Elijah says.
And that's why you're the black sheep of the group, I take it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, he is, actually. We'll get into that. But I'm kind of a sports betting guy myself. But I haven't placed any bets yet, but I think I'm going to go Vikings on this one, too.
Okay, good for you. Good for you. See, yep. We're starting off on the right foot, though. That's absolutely right. So
two for two.
There you go. Actually, 3 for 3. I'll throw in. I'll go for the Vikings too. But I grew up here, so there you go. Now, Beatty Mansion is actually an interesting story, and we'll get into that here in a bit. But Apex Paranormal in the group in general, I got to know, guys. We all have a genesis of where our interest in the paranormal comes from and how we got into it. Mine happens to be dream visitations and out-of-body experiences. I take it you guys have your genesis as well. Elijah, well, let's start with you. How did you get interested in the paranormal? What happened with you that all of a sudden you had this love of the paranormal spark within you?
Well, I've got what I think is kind of a typical story. Which I didn't realize until I got into the paranormal, but I had experiences growing up. It started when I was about 7. We lived in, or moved to the real old farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, and had experiences for years and years and years after that. So I was always kind of the weird kid. You know, I always liked to research this stuff, ghost stuff, Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, any paranormal things because of those experiences that I had.
Now, let me ask you this, because you mentioned a lot of cryptid stuff in there, and I don't know what age group you are, and I'm not even going to ask, but was In Search Of and Leonard Nimoy part of that whole love, too? Because there's a whole age group of us that watched, you know, it, depending on your age group, there was either sightings or there was In Search Of. You fall in.
Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah, Unsolved Mysteries. You fall into one or the other of those TV groups. Was it Unsolved Mysteries for you guys, or?
It was, for me, it was Unsolved Mysteries. That was actually something my whole family sat down and watched together. That was kind of the big, you know, the family get-together, weekly get-together kind of show for us, which just helped feed, you know, my passion in the paranormal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sean, was that the same for you?
Well, you know, me being only 21 years old, I don't even know what Unsolved Mysteries is.
Yeah.
So it was Star Wars, the new movies? That was what was... No, I'm kidding.
Oh, no. Let's not even bring that up. No.
Oh, man. As long as we dig up that story, have you guys seen the latest, The Last Jedi? Have you?
Yeah, we saw it together, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's dig up the story and get it over with, as long as we're up on it. I know I'm bouncing from topic to topic here, which makes for a terrible interview, but what did you guys think, just briefly? Because I'm taking you guys are younger, what did you think of The Last Jedi?
Yeah, well,
I'm younger than Sean, for the record.
Yeah, he is by a little bit, just by a couple years. Or so.
Okay.
But, so me being in the generation that was born in 1979, I grew up watching Star Wars, and mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, huge Luke Skywalker, you know, fan, and, you know, all that stuff, and, you know, grew up in the 80s, but also, you know, when the movies ended, of course, the books came out shortly after, you know, so I was a big fan of the books, and read the books, and, you know, big fan of that universe, but Disney or whatever was, to me, they were clear saying that, you know, we're not going to follow the books, you know, we're not going to follow that canon. We're going to kind of do our own thing. They said that way before the Force Awakens even came out. So So I knew that going in, you know, and I, so, but I was still kind of hyped about it, you know, and so, you know, I enjoyed the first one. First one was really good. To me, it was really good throwback, you know, to, you know, the original one. And enjoyed that. And so this one came out, you know, and I mean, I really like this one a lot because I, you know, because I knew, because I like it because it, you know, I think it's doing a good job about bringing in new fans, which is what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you gotta keep the story going. I mean, like I told Elijah, I was like, you know, the Skywalkers don't have the, you know, don't have the patent on the Force.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So there's other Force users out there and strong ones, you know what I mean? So it's
sure.
Okay if somebody's not a Skywalker or a Kenobi or whatever, you know what I mean? And so
right.
A lot of people freaked out wanting all this stuff to recapture their childhood, but it's like, it's not about that, you know? So I think a lot of people were just kind of upset about that and don't know how to handle it. I mean, that's kind of my take, but I mean, overall, I enjoyed the movie and I'm excited to see where it goes.
That's an interesting take. I like that. What did you think as far as your take on it, Elijah?
Son and I have talked enough that I think we've got similar impressions of it now. It was definitely not your daddy's Star Wars, so to speak.
No, it wasn't. No.
But, you know, they're trying to create new fans and appeal to a new generation, so I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely want my kids to, you know, enjoy Star Wars the same way that I did growing up. So while I didn't, you know, get the Skywalker saga ended in the way that, you know, I felt like I wanted to, I also understood what they're doing. Now, I'll tell you, we about lost a friend over this.
Really?
Yeah, we did. He's still pissed about it.
He's still pissed. We had a guy that, you know, we go to all these movies together, a little group of guys. And me and this guy went on a tear for 2-3 weeks about how angry he was, and
right.
That's not how they should end the Skywalker. I all over Facebook, posting articles, just was, you know, I thought I was going to make it his mission to try to personally destroy the movie.
Right. You know, they have a petition going around, I think, still to erase it from the canon.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, I think it's like change.org has one to actually take it out of canon. I'll tell you this much. This is the issue I have with it. And I agree. Bring new characters in. Give us something new to look at and give something for this generation. But here's my issue with it. And that is the older characters don't act true to form. They just don't act the way they should. You know, I don't know how else to put it, and without giving any spoilers, which I won't give any spoilers on the show, but they just don't act the way they should. They don't act true to form. And the only way I can put that is, what's a good way of putting it? Luke Skywalker would not hide on another planet far away if he knew his brother-in-law and sister were in trouble. He just wouldn't. He didn't do it in the first three movies, and he wouldn't do it in this series. And I guess that's the most glaring thing that's wrong with this entire back third or this final 7, 8, 9 that I just I look at these movies and go, you know, that's the glaring issue with it. And as far as the new characters, I really like Rey. I relate to Rey. I think she's wonderful. And the rest of the cast are just whining emo kids. I don't get it. I don't get the appeal of any of them. And I guess if they were deeper, you know, I mean, to me, Ben Solo is just like, what is your problem? You know, I it's nothing taking him over somebody's knee and whacking him a few times wouldn't solve. I just, you know, if he had a tough childhood, I could see. But, you know, hey, you grew up Han Solo and General Leia's kid. You can't, life couldn't have been that bad, you know? I mean, I don't know. I just don't see but I guess we should cut the Star Wars talk there. But I guess that's where I guess the disconnect is for me. But I don't know. I just felt like it could have been written better. That's what it you know, but you know, I can see where the new generation is grabbing onto it and liking it and keeping it for its own. I get it. But as far as the old characters go, they're just not relatable because they just don't act like themselves, I guess. That's I guess where I come in on it. So Apex Paranormal. So we've got what your influences were. Your first experience with the paranormal, or the first time you really experienced something for yourself, Elijah. What was it? What kind of got you by the? I want to say got you by the shorts. That doesn't sound right. But what was your first experience?
Well, I'll go straight to I'm gonna call it to professional life, the career as a paranormal investigator. I'll go into that. The first time we ever did this was the three kind of originating founders of our group decided to go check out. First off, we'd all work together. We're all mental health professionals. I think that's what kind of makes us a little different than some other groups out there.
Okay.
And you know, Sean and I, man, we've known each other for 40 years, it seems. And we just kind of started figuring out that, hey, you know, we've all got this weirdo interest in, you know, ghosts and things like that. So we decided to go check out a public ghost hunt at the Missouri State Penitentiary out in Jeff City, Missouri. So we went and did this, no expectations, no plans, no nothing. We just went planning on, you know, kind of a guy's night out. Let's go have fun, hang out with the boys out of town at this spooky old prison, see what happens. And instantly fell in love with it. That was kind of, that was it. Hook, line, and sinker. This thing was amazing. And that's probably where we had our first experiences. And I think the first one that really stands out in my mind was the minute we walked into, I think it's C Hall. Does that sound right, Sean?
Yeah, C Hall. Yeah, I was thinking that same story.
The minute we walk into C Hall and the lady's just starting to kind of give her tour of the place, all of a sudden we hear something, boom, 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 take off running around the top.
It's like
floor.
Catwalk.
It's not really a floor, the catwalk, yeah. Where the jail cells are. Mm-hmm. And you could hear it clear as day. Something takes off running, some echoes, and then she goes, oh, yep, that's the runner. By the way, people report hearing somebody run around that top floor, and it's three, four stories up of jail block. So that was, you know, our first time out, our first time doing anything. We walk right in the building, boom, something we couldn't see takes off running across the catwalks, and I was like, that's it. I want to do this all the time.
Yep, I'm in love. It was almost like it was meant to be or something. Like I walked in, it was like that happened, and like immediately, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!"
That's an interesting reaction. I want to stop you guys with that. I'm in love now. Now, when you hear somebody talk about, you talk about it in one of two ways. You talk about it as an adrenaline rush, or fear. Some people talk about the first time they run into the paranormal. It's a shock or fear, or like you're talking about it now. I think you're talking about I'm in love or an adrenaline rush. When you get that, am I mistaking love and rush? Is that what is that? Am I not getting it correctly, or explain it a little bit more to me? What is that feeling you get when you first have that first experience?
So for me, I guess it was more of a rush, but it was like, I know I'm going to love doing this. You know what I mean? Like, it was like a rush because I'd never expected a million. I mean, I'm still a skeptic at heart, and I'm thinking like, surely we walk in a building. Yeah, it's a creepy old prison, but we're not going to have something like right in our face as soon as we walk in, you know? And so then when we walked in and it happened, I was like, I mean, like the whole group, it was probably about 10 of us, maybe not, you know, counting the other people that were there too, about 10 of us. So everybody was accounted for, you know, and we all looked at each other and was like, I remember thinking like, was that supposed to happen? You know, and the tour guide immediately was like, no, nah, that's our runner, you know, but it was just that huge for me. And it still stays that way. Like I still, whenever something happens, like I had the exact same rush that I had when I first walked in that building. You know, even now, we go ghost hunt now and something happens, I have that exact same excitement, I guess.
Now, let me ask the two of you, how long did it take, or how many investigations did it take, or maybe it happened even that same weekend, did it take before something would happen and that rush was tamped down a little bit, and then you started thinking, okay, what are some other causes for that, or did that really happen? When did the skeptical side creep up before the initial reaction happened?
I would say for me, like I said, we're all, skeptics to an extent. Some of us are more so than others, I guess fair to say. But I think for me, I started to really stop and think, like, what else could that be? Was probably, probably that our next investigation, when we investigated the old Civil War mansion here in Kansas City, we really snapped into it and we're like, hey, we need to go into it, see if we can, debunk some things. And I think we did a pretty effective job debunking things, So for me, it was like that second night. It was like, it took that whole night to kind of get those jitters and, the honeymoon phase kind of thing, But then the second investigation was like, let's kind of get down to business. Let's kind of make an identity for ourselves. Let's see what this stuff is about, And so for me, I think it just took one other investigation. I mean, I don't know what Elijah thinks, but.
Well, I'll say mine's a little different because I had paranormal experiences growing up. I've had them since a young age, and it was something that clearly left, a huge impact on my life, a huge imprint on my life. So what was really a factor for me was all these years, and I spent a lot of time researching the paranormal about the best way I knew how. I'd go to the library and I'd try to find every book I could and I'd read it. And this was pre-internet, but when internet started kind of coming out, I'd get on there and see anything I could find. And just old school like that, I had no idea that there was anything such as ghost hunting or paranormal investigating outside of these books and things. So first time I saw ghost hunters, I was blown away. I had no clue that people actually went out and looked for this stuff, that you could actually go and investigate, that you could go and try to have these experiences and recreate them and test them and check them. So that night, that first weekend at Missouri State Penitentiary was the first time that I actually got to revisit this thing, and that had such a huge impact on my life. And I don't know if control is the right word, but have some kind of semblance of I don't know what I'm trying to say. So
I get what you're saying there. That control is a good word. I mean, control is a good word. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I get what you're saying.
No, I was kind of stumbling, trying to think of what I'm saying. Instead of it being something that, I just kind of sat hopelessly by what happened to me, this is something I could go out and try to experience and try to learn about and try to gain some understanding that, of all these things I've experienced in my life and try to know more about them. So that weekend at the penitentiary, I think, was, like Sean said, it was rose-colored glasses. It was going out. It was, man, we could actually do this. This is freaking awesome. We could go out and investigate and test things and try to understand and learn more about this stuff. And it's not just something where we sit at home and watch it on TV or we read a book. It's something that we could actively get involved and do. So, we decided to set us up as a group. And, man, I think it was maybe a month later or so that we were investigating as Apex Paranormal, and rather than just kind of being, geeky little schoolboys, it was, let's put a plan together, let's come up with, things we want to test and things we want to try and debunk and actually start investigating and take this thing serious.
There's a point as investigators where you what's a good way of putting this? Where the training wheels kind of come off, where you start to become comfortable in your own skin when you begin to make judgments in what is in the physical, what happening is actually physical. It's not something paranormal. And when something is an actual haunting, do you remember that moment when everything wasn't necessarily paranormal to you, and when you could make snap judgments between one and the other and know, oh, I know what that is. That's this. And, oh, well, that obviously can't be anything physical. And when it just became simple for you, do you remember that moment in your history, or is it still something that isn't so simple to discern for you guys?
I would say probably, again, back to our second location. I mean, I think guests are where we first debunked anything. I think if I remember right, there was like a staircase that kind of winded around, and one of the reports was about like cold spots and stuff. And one of our guys, Ed, he has a background in construction and stuff. So he tends to like be probably the most like, okay, is it really paranormal or like something else is going on? So we were walking that, we're trying to test that theory, like there's cold spots, this is weird. So we started feeling the cold spots. At first we kind of had that giddiness, like, oh my God, we feel it. But then, you know, Ed was like, well, hold on, let's figure this out some more. We walked around a little bit more around the staircase and realized that the way that the vents kind of did and the air kind of traveled the same curve of the wall. And it would, like, the vent on the top floor or whatever would kind of curve around, and that would, or I mean, the, you know, the air coming through would curve around and kind of make it feel like a weird cold spot in one area of the staircase. And so I remember that stands out to me because I think that was our first debunk, if I'm thinking right, if I'm remembering right. And so that let me know, like, okay, this is, you know, there is ways to debunk things. And so not, you know, so kind of helped change my thinking, like, okay, let me look at things like, let me not freak out and think everything's a ghost, you know? And so, you know, that was kind of my first proof that, like, yeah, there might be paranormal things, but there's also more likely an explanation. So that's what it was for me.
I got to wonder, too.
I think...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Elijah.
Sorry. Well, I was just going to add to that. I think that one of the things I really appreciate about our team and the people that we work with, especially when we've worked with other groups and we talked to them quite a bit, and I noticed in some groups that, you know, they have a little bit of difficulty with this, is being open to constant evolution and discussion on how you guys do things. I mean, we just had an investigation last week, and we spent all week, you know, trying to learn from that investigation and what did we do right, what did we do wrong, how do we do things better next time or different next time, and, you know, man, we forgot to do this and we need to, you know, not do that, or so on and so forth. So mm-hmm. I think that still is an ever-changing, ever-growing topic, I guess.
Sure.
We're constantly learning how to do better and how to debunk things and how to figure them out, you know, so on and so forth.
I'm curious, with you mentioned that there's mental health professionals there in your group, and one of the things that fascinates Dave and I still to this day is the subject of tulpas or even group hauntings caused by mental projection. And have you guys run into anything like that? The group or even a mass haunting caused by someone's imagination, not necessarily anything paranormal?
I'll jump on this one. So I don't know that we've necessarily come across something manifesting based on a group, but I will tell you that we have done experiments in this, and where we've done, you know, public events, we've had groups of people. I mean, hell, we've done it when we've only had a few people around, where, you know, one of us will say something to the effect of, oh my gosh, do you guys see that shadow coming down those stairs over there? And then one by one, you hear other people say, oh yeah, oh, I see it. Yeah, it's walking down the stairs. And somebody else will go, wait, what? Oh yeah, I see it too. So I think there's definitely, on a psychological side of things, I think there's definitely a, it's late. I can't even think straight. There's an influence. There's a, Sean, what's the word I'm trying to think of here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's like a social, it's like a, it's like a groupthink kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, cause you want to fit it. You want to like be accepted. Typically people want to be accepted. They want to like, you know, they want to have, it's like a shared experience. You want to have the same experience. So like Elijah said, that's a good example. So I was like, oh man, I saw a shadow peeking around the corner. And then it's like, you see it? And then, you know, you don't want to be that person that didn't see it. So you're like, yeah, I think I did, you know, and then somebody else is like, oh yeah, I think I just saw it, you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's like a sociology thing. That's a very common, it's not unusual. And I think that happens a lot because people just want to kind of have fun and they want to have that experience. Like when I say people, I mean like not necessarily ghost hunters, quote unquote, but I mean like people that are just there that actually pay to kind of just walk through, or, you know what I mean? Those people, just regular people.
Right, right. And actually that leads actually to the next question I was going to ask. You know, we've run events in the past. Other people have run events in the past. I'm sure now with Beatty Mansion, that's been set up now. And we'll talk about that here in the next half of the program, being set up for events and research and whatnot. Are you afraid? And we can discuss this in the second half of the program, but as well. But are you afraid, or does it come up in discussion amongst you, you guys at Apex Paranormal, the idea that when you get a huge group of people, and Dave and I have discussed this too, and actually amongst ourselves and amongst other investigators, seasoned investigators, that when you get enough people together, because we would run events with, you know, a couple hundred people, that when you get these people together and you introduce them to the history of a building, and let's say the Stanley Hotel is a good example, when you take people on the tour beforehand and you give them the history of the building, and then you set them loose into groups, even tiny groups of 7-8 people, into a certain area of a building. Well, now they're armed with the history of the building. You've given them names. You've given mm-hmm. them a backstory. And they're hyped up going into this location. Do you feel like that kinetic energy that these people bring forward is enhancing the potential of a haunting without really even anything being there? Are they creating their own haunting? I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I think there's definitely some validity to that. So I think the next natural step in kind of that question is whether the expectation of having activity is what's creating activity, mm-hmm. or is it just, you know, and I guess the difference is if there's actual activity there or not. So is it actually creating physical activity? Are you creating a ghost or creating a spirit to be there based on that? Or is it just the influence of all these people wanting to have an experience, so they falsely, kind of like a placebo effect, mm-hmm. you know, start experiencing a haunting? I tend to lean more towards, you know, kind of that placebo effect, or having that, you know, psychological effect.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think too. I mean,
manifesting.
I agree, Elijah. I think if you put a group of people together, it could be, you know, one of somebody's house, a random person's house, and you start telling stories. Oh, this place is haunted. I've had this experience, that experience. But it's just a regular house. And so if you put like 5 people in it, but you tell them all these stories beforehand, more than likely they're going to be creeped out. You know, like you light a couple candles around or something, you know, make it look creepy, and you bring them in, and they're going to be creeped out just by, I mean, that's the psychology. I mean, you're going to be creeped out just because of, you've been kind of, what's the word? You know, you've been kind of conditioned to be afraid, you know, to have those creepy feelings or whatever. And so I think it's more, like I said, that placebo effect. Like, you know, if a place isn't, you know, just because you kind of tell them that, they're like, oh man, I think I heard something. You hear something? You know? And so I think that, you know, I think a place already has to have activity before something can be enhanced, if that makes sense. If it's just a regular place, you know, I don't think no matter how much you want something to be there, I don't think you'd end up being there.
Elijah Buchholz and Sean Holland are our guests. They're from Apex Paranormal, and we're talking a little bit just about their paranormal outlook in general. In this next half of the program, after our break, we're going to talk a little bit about Beatty Mansion and about their involvement with Beatty Mansion, and how they came about Beatty Mansion, and now what they're doing with Beatty Mansion. It's actually a very interesting story about how they came about Beatty Mansion and what they're doing with the mansion now, and how it's now become, if anything, kind of a haven for paranormal investigators. And would you say, guys, like a training ground for paranormal investigators?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty, I mean, you know, the place is legit. I mean, you know, I would definitely encourage somebody to be ready to, you know, experience some things, you know, whether they're a new investigator or whether they're a seasoned investigator. I mean, that place doesn't tend to disappoint. It's pretty cool.
All right. Well, we'll talk about it after the break. Apex Paranormal is a multi-state nonprofit organization with teams in Kansas City and Iowa. They have two chapters. Of course, Elijah Buchholz and Sean Holland, our guests tonight, are part of the Kansas group. The Iowa group is Jill Heinen, the investigator, PR and social media, Angie Johnson, the investigator and techie, Beth, the investigator and researcher, are all part of their Iowa group. So they have two teams. And of course, you can look up their teams, both in Kansas and Iowa, at theapexparanormal.com. Once again, theapexparanormal.com, and get to know the entire team by going to the section that's labeled About Apex. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennis in for Dave Schrader, who has succumbed to the man flu. You may remove your caps and pour a little out on the curb for Dave. Poor Dave. He succumbed. Boys, he succumbed. We can't do anything about it. It's the man flu. Have you had the man flu by chance, Elijah, Sean? Have you had the man flu? Yeah.
I have not. I got the man flu shot.
Did you? It's only working on 10% of people now.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Elijah Buchholz and Sean Holland are our guests from Apex Paranormal. Here's the deal. Dave has been playing this up on social media like it is the worst thing to ever happen to him. I don't know how to tell him this. I had sepsis this last summer, and I came within about a minute and a half to two minutes of dying in the hospital. But to him, this man flu is the worst thing that's ever happened in his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, guys,
I'll be the first dude.
Yeah.
I'll be the first dude, man. I get the man flu. I'm a pansy.
Really?
If I get a stuffy nose, I'm a whiny baby about it.
That is true. I can attest to that. Yeah.
I produce podcasts and did voice work from my hospital bed, and this man flu is killing him, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I can't deal with being sick.
Yeah, it doesn't take my you don't even have to be sick. Like Elijah, we'll wake up from a late night investigating at a place, and he'll wake up with an attitude because he didn't get his full. It's full 8 hours of sleep. And,
well, now I can sympathize there. I can sympathize there. I'm a little bit of a bear too if I don't get my sleep. But I'm just saying it's the sniffles. You know, maybe a little achiness.
Well, the only one that wakes up not grumpy after a ghost hunt is the old guy, and that's just he's the first one to fall asleep, and he snores all night, so then none of the rest of us get to sleep.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the older you get, and this is just science, the older you get, the less you're able to sleep. And it's mainly aches and pains, and there's less of that fairy dust or whatever it is in you that makes you sleep in the first place. So you end up being grouchy because of lack of sleep and because life just kicks you in the shorts all the time.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, you become a miserable old goat. There you go. By the time it's all over, anyways. So yeah, that's why the old guy doesn't get any sleep at all and ends up, you know, grumpy in the morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I can relate to that. I get up and it's like, you know, someone's been sticking their spurs in my hind end. I mean, I don't think I get up, you know, light and airy at all. And nothing helps it. Cups of coffee, you could tickle my undercarriage with a feather. Nothing's gonna make me happy in the morning. So essentially,
see, Sean.
Essentially, nothing'll do it. If you don't wake up, you know, my mom wakes up like Glenda the Good Witch. You know, she's like, "Good morning, everybody." And I love my mother to death, but. It's everything I can do not to punch her in the face. I mean, it's my mother, But and I love her to death, but
that's exactly how I feel about Sean in the mornings.
Yeah, you can't come at me like that.
Yeah, well, you know, neither me or Elijah are morning people. Neither one of us are morning people, but you know, I tend to be a little more sociable in the morning. He's just like wakes up and starts like slamming around equipment, grabbing wires and wrapping stuff up and not talking to anybody. I'm like, all right, let's pack up and leave.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you got to get stuff done. You don't, I mean, you know, if, just get it done. Just don't talk to anybody. Just if it's got to get done, it's got to let me have my time. Let's just get this stuff done and get where we need to get, you know. And when I become sociable, I'll become sociable, you know.
Yeah. There you go.
And I'm a sociable person. It's just I'm not sociable before 11:30, 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly right.
That's why I do what I do at night. Mm-hmm. That's how it all works out. I can see I'm agreeable. Just not before.
At night.
Just not in the morning. That's why I don't have a morning job. That's why I've been fired from many telemarketing jobs. Just saying.
Oh, God.
Oh, damn.
You just can't say to a customer, ma'am, I completely agree with you. There's been a lot of ma'am, shove it up your ass. Mainly because, you know, you're on the phone, it's 9 a.m., and you just don't agree with anybody before noon.
Yeah, no, I think they frown on that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they call you into the office and they say, we really don't agree with your attitude. And then you look and you say, boss, shove it up your ass. And they're like, oh, you can go out the door now. Yeah. They don't really like my attitude before noon. I'm just saying. Anyways, so we're talking paranormal now. We've gone somehow off the rails in a terrible way, but we're talking paranormal and how to wrap up your equipment without offending your teammates before noon, and we're talking about Apex Paranormal, and they're involved now with the Beatty Mansion. Tell us first of all, Elijah and Sean, where is the Beatty Mansion?
It's located in St. Joseph, Missouri.
And give us a little bit of the history of the Beatty Mansion and what makes it such a high level of haunting, and what is it about this place that people don't want to go into it?
I'm going to pass that one to Elijah. He's our history guy.
Yeah. Well, let's start with this. When we got involved with the place, if that's all right, Tim, I'm gonna take you back to the beginning.
Yeah, please do.
The way we got involved in this. Hey, would you just simmer down? So we unfortunately don't end up doing a whole lot of private cases or residential cases because we tend to be able to debunk and explain them away before it ever gets to the point of investigation. This was the first time we got a phone call from the caretaker at this place up in St. Joseph, Missouri. And this guy said, you know, we've been trying to renovate this place for years and we can't keep contractors here. We got all this paranormal activity going on. We don't know what to do. What's the situation? We don't know what's going on. Can you guys just come up here, check it out, help us out, tell us what you think. And let's go from there. So we had already had an investigation planned up in St. Joseph, Missouri. It's about an hour north of Kansas City, 45 minutes north. And we decided, we told this guy, you know, we'll come up a couple hours early and maybe talk with you a little bit and walk around, look at the place and see if, you know, what we think if it warrants an investigation. We couldn't find anything online. We couldn't find any history. You know, we found a couple of pictures of it. And we kind of went into this blind. So we go up there and meet this guy. He wouldn't even go in by himself. He was waiting outside for us. We go in and not even 5 minutes of walking into the place, Ed sees a person walk across the hallway. And we've never been to any location where it's that immediate, that quick, that obvious of a thing. See somebody walk across the hallway. Then we go upstairs, or I go upstairs, and we're just kind of walking around. Again, this is less than 10 minutes of being in the place. And all of a sudden, I hear this voice yell out, So I hollered down and I said, Ed, what'd you say, man? I couldn't make out what you said. And he said, I didn't say anything. I heard that, but I didn't say anything. So we both yell at Sean. Sean, did you just yell? No. And we happen to have recorders running. So we gathered back up and we played the recorders back. And sure enough, clear as day, you hear a female yell, I want to go home. And it's loud enough that all three of us on three different – well, Sean, I don't think you heard it, did you?
No, I was in the basement. I went straight down to the basement, so I didn't actually hear it.
So Ed and I both heard it, and we caught it on multiple recorders that both Ed and I had. And it continued from there. Investigation continued from there, and we were just blown away. This was the most active place that we had ever investigated. And we thought, well, you know, maybe this is a fluke. It's the first time people have been there investigating. Although we kept hearing these stories about the contractors and the caretakers and things like that. So we went ahead and set up a full overnight investigation. And, man, the activity didn't get less. It got way more, and it got more intense, and it got more active and more obvious in your face. So we set up a third investigation, and we can go into more details of those if you want. We set up a third investigation. And on this one, we plan to just go ahead and we're going to stay there for an entire weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And we invited various guests to come, other paranormal investigators from other groups to come to see, we wanted to make sure it's not just us. Like, we're not going in this place and, you know, maybe we've just been investigating long enough that we've got our screws loose and we're just crazy. Let's bring other people in and see if we can corroborate some of this. Every single person that went in there had crazy personal experiences, hearing things, seeing things, feeling things, and it was everybody, and they're all blown away. So we found this place. It's a massive building. We found out, and we've done and been able to do enough research to find out a lot of history about it. So massive, beautiful building, incredibly great history to it. And by God, everybody walks into the place is getting blown away with the activity. So we're like, man, we can't let this thing just sit here. So we talked to the owner and we said, man, I don't think you understand that you've got this just paranormal dreamland on your hands here. And the owner was actually debating whether or not to sell the place because it's been just sitting there and he can't renovate it. He wanted to turn it into a B&B. That wasn't going to happen. He wanted to do, had these plans for it, and it's just sitting there as a cash hole. And so we told him, groups will be willing to rent this place out. They'll want to come. They'll want to check it out. Once you get a couple groups in here and they experience the activity in this place and the amazing history behind it, you could at least start generating some money and use that to renovate it. And he was agreeable to it. So last September, we opened the place up and had groups come in September and October. And sure enough, you talk to any of those groups and they'll tell you, man, this place is incredible.
Now, and we'll get in depth a little bit with some of those investigations and what exactly the type of activity that was going on with them. But here's my first question, and it's on the economic side of things. And here's what I've always wondered too. You mentioned that you talked to the owner about it becoming a B&B. You of course know about the plans that they came up with for Waverly Hills and how they were turning it into a hotel, and there was going to be this cafeteria, and they're in the midst of doing all this stuff with kind of super tourism with Waverly Hills. And I know it makes some people cringe and other people think, well, if you keep the integrity of the way Waverly is, well, that makes it more conducive to, actually being able to investigate it, blah, blah, blah. I gotta know when you sat down with the owner of the Beatty and you said, you don't want to turn it into a B&B. My first question would be, why would you say that to him? Because I'm going to take you down a certain road here and a certain bit of logic here. But first, I want to find out why you would say that to him. Why did you say don't do that in the first place?
We didn't turn it into a B&B. Right. Sorry, Sean. I know I'm talking. Okay. Okay. We didn't tell him to do that. Okay. He's not been able to do that because he can't keep contractors there long enough. The contractors get scared off.
Okay.
So, I mean, if that's something that he ends up, and he may still want to, but at this point, you know, he's looking at maybe having to sell the place and not even be able to keep the place open because it's just draining money. It's a money pit.
Okay.
So our part of our perspective is, I mean, the thing's got an amazing history, and we want that history to be preserved. We want, you know, especially the city of St. Joseph to be able to enjoy it. It's connected, and we can share, you know, that history more with you. But it's got deep connections to the city, and the history is incredible. We want this place to be accessible to others. And from the paranormal perspective, we want it to be accessible to other paranormal investigators because of how much incredible activity we as a group have captured there. So our approach and our hard sell to the owner was, you know, groups like us will pay a rental fee to come in and investigate the place. So you could be generating revenue rather than just sitting here draining money and you having to offload it. It could be generating some revenue for you that you can then put back into the building, which is what he wants to do anyways. He just didn't know how to make that happen. And that was our hard sell of, man, let us do paranormal stuff with it. Let paranormal groups come in here so they can experience the stuff that we're experiencing. And at the same time, you can then start having a little bit of money in your pocket to put back into the place and renovate it and let this be accessible to people.
But here's a $100,000 question, and that's this. You do have other locations around the United States that are open, that are struggling to stay open because you've got things like property taxes and other things, even upkeep to these locations to try and keep them open year round for paranormal groups. And the two aren't quite meeting in the middle. The revenue from paranormal groups to try and keep the lights on and actually being able to keep them going year round. And being able to get notoriety and be able to get out there and make themselves known to paranormal groups so that there are enough groups coming in to keep the lights on. So I guess my question to you would be, how do you get the notoriety out there for Beatty Mansion so that everyone's hearing about it, so that there are enough groups coming in, paying the fee to come in and investigate and keep the lights on over there at Beatty Mansion so that it is profitable enough to keep it open as for lack of a better term, as a tourist attraction for paranormal groups to investigate.
So, Sean, is it all right if I grab this one too? I hope.
Yeah, go ahead.
First and foremost, the place sells itself. We're paranormal investigators. We're not salesmen.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, as an investigator, the place sells itself. You come and investigate, and you're going to fall in love with it.
Okay.
And that's what we found with ourselves, and with the groups that we've come in as well. You know, they want to keep coming back. So there's that angle of it. But I hear what you're saying too.
Right,
I definitely hear what you're saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but here's the other angle of this. From a business standpoint, when you said there's got to be something like a B&B or something in there, there's got to be a place or there's got to be enough room. And obviously, if this is a mansion, there's enough room, you would think, for teams to be able to stay the night or someone or big groups to be able to stay the night there so that they can double up on income, whether it be to rent rooms, rent beds, rent whatever, for people to stay there to double up on income. Because here's a situation, and I'm shooting from the hip and being honest with you here. You've got and I don't want to name names on the air because honestly, there are quite a few haunted locations out there that are struggling. They are struggling from year to year to keep their doors open because there are quite a few locations out there, and there are a few well-known locations out there that are struggling to keep their doors open to paranormal groups to investigate because the groups are out there and they're willing to pay money to investigate, but and they're very well known and very well haunted, I guess is the term I want to use. But in that, it's the competition of having that location out there and then getting groups to travel to that location to check it out. You know, being, and you said this is in St. Joseph, Missouri, correct?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. So the nearest airport is how far away?
Oh, 40 minutes.
Okay. Okay. So you gotta convince people to get to that airport, drive to that location. There's got to be places to stay in there. You want them to stay in there so they're not taking their business elsewhere to another hotel. So you want them to stay in the actual haunted location, not outside of it. Are there restaurants around that mansion?
Yeah, there's several. But yeah, I mean, St. Joe's not a small town. I mean, I guess it's, relatively speaking, I mean, they're smaller towns, but it's a decent sized town. It's got every, you know, every fast food place. It's got its own, you know, it's got its own unique diners / restaurants that are unique to the town that are, you know, that are kind of cool. You know, it sits on a river, you know.
Right. I guess the more,
you know, so it's got
I'm not trying to break this out into a business class, but the more self-contained that the mansion is, as far as being able to keep the clientele there, especially over a weekend of investigating, the more successful it's going to be. Because there are, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put this. These locations, I guess, are plentiful. There are a lot out there. There are a lot of there are a lot of groups out there that will travel a certain distance to investigate, but there are a lot that are in their backyards as well. So in order to get people to travel even a few states over to investigate Beatty Mansion, you got to give them a little something extra to get them there. And although the activity is crazy and they're going to want to see it, they're also going to want a little something extra in there as well.
Well, this is not an endeavor that people are setting out to get rich. We just want people to be able to access it and keep the doors open. So it doesn't take much for us. So groups come in, we got one flat fee, man, they can have the place whenever they want to get there until they get up and leave in the morning. The place is theirs. They can stay the night there. They can, do whatever they want. The place.
Yeah. They don't have, yeah.
Then you get a hotel if you want. Yeah. If you're not brave enough to stay there. So it's got accessibility. It's pretty reasonably priced compared to places that we pay for.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. The competition, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me, as far as these investigations, what did you first come across on your first investigation, when you came across this? You're hearing that contractors are having a hard time staying in the building. When you first get into Beatty Mansion, what are you experiencing yourself? What sort of things are you seeing that are kind of raising your eyebrows?
I would say, you know, like when we first got there, one of my first experiences, I mean, you get that overwhelming feeling of, you know, kind of dread, or that you're not supposed to be there, or that you're intruding. You know what I mean? So for me, it wasn't very like, I mean, I'm kind of used to being going in there now, but at first it wasn't very like welcoming. You know what I mean? It's more of like, you know, intruding on something, especially when you go upstairs. Cause that's more of, you know, that's a whole different story. I'm sure we'll get into that, but upstairs is a certain wing upstairs really has a feeling of like, don't be up here, you're not supposed to be up here, kind of thing. So, but I mean, the first experiences we had there were really, you know, a lot of, you know, like a lot of shadow stuff, you know, as far as like, but actual like figures, like people see kind of, you know, peeking around doors and, you know, but like it mostly is a lot of like audible hearing things, like hearing disembodied voices, not even EVP, but like actually hearing voice. And to me, that's pretty like remarkable to hear, like, you know, I've heard some of the, you know, you hear like a distant scream that it's distant, but it's still in the house. You can hear it like bounce off the wall. You know, hear conversations. I mean, it's like it's, those are the kind of things that stand out, that stood out for us when we first got there, I think.
So audible voices throughout the house.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now.
Absolutely. Singing. You hear singing. You know, singing. It's pretty crazy, man. It sounds crazy to say, but like you hear it when you, I mean, like, you don't, I mean, you know, I can comfortably say it. You know, I'm, like I said, I've been saying, I'm a pretty big skeptic with this stuff, but there's some stuff that you hear, I just cannot explain. Like, just people, you know, like I said, singing and just walking around with, you know, hearing the footsteps. It's just weird.
Now, and that can be pretty alarming, but what kind of stuff was happening that the contractors didn't want to stay around? I mean, what were they experiencing that was keeping them from wanting to work there?
Well, like, you know, like Elijah said at the beginning, we went back to the kind of the start of it. I mean, you know, we've never had any success with private locations or residential, quote unquote, residential places. And, you know, this guy called, he was pretty level headed, you know, and he was like, look, you know, I don't scare easy. I don't really, you know, I don't know if I really believe in this stuff, you know, and, but, you know, he actually was scratched, you know, and he's a guy that, you know, he's a regular guy. He has a professional job, you know, like, you know, he just don't, I mean, he's just kind of watching over the place for his buddy. You know, he doesn't own it. His buddy owns it, but the owner actually lives in Florida. This guy was just kind of like a caretaker for him, just as a favor. And he said he was trying to, you know, he kind of tried to oversee some of the construction and oversee some of the stuff. And, you know, and plus there's also break-ins there. There was break-ins there when it was sitting vacant. And so he'd have to try to run people out of there. And so, you know, he decided he was going to sit one night. Well, yeah, and, you know, as he was the caretaker, it was a few months out of the year, he actually stayed there himself. You know, and so he kind of lived there, so to speak. And he would, you know, have these things happen, and he'd hear these clear, like, voices in the house. Like, one story we like to tell was kind of funny. You know, he said he was in the house and by himself around 2 or 3 in the morning, couldn't sleep, was kind of up on his phone maybe or something like most of us do. You know, and he heard, like, in another part of the house, heard somebody sounded like a servant. You know, it was like, you know, like the servant said, you know, like, I'll be right there, sir. You know, like a British accent or something. And he's like, it freaked him out. He's like, wait a minute. He's like, and he didn't, see, what got me, because he told me that story when he called me on the phone, you know, because I'm kind of the first line of defense. So that when somebody calls and wants to say, like, hey, my house is haunted or whatever, I'm kind of that first guy you talk to. And so he told me the story. He's like, you know, and I was listening for little cues, little clues, and he didn't jump to say, like, oh, my God, it was a ghost automatically, and I, you know, what he said, but he's like, you know, I think somebody broke in. He's like, somebody's got to be in the house. So he grabbed his gun, you know, and he went to go clear the house, you know, and when he told me he did that, that, like, almost had me right there. I was like, okay, this guy's legit. You know, he didn't jump and say, oh, there's a ghost in here, I'm freaking out. He went to say, like, this is a real person, I'm going to go check, you know, let me go see what's up. And he said he went and cleared the house and didn't find anything. No entry points, no break-in, no nothing. And he said he was like, you know, that really got him. But then what the cherry on the cake or whatever was when he got scratched in the basement. He was watching, because there was a window that people could get into, and he was sitting there watching, trying to catch somebody break in so he could, like, kind of get them and be like, hey, I'm calling the cops, blah, blah, blah. And he was watching this window, and he said it was wintertime, but he had, like, a sweater on, and watching this window, and all of a sudden he felt his arm kind of burning. He's like, oh, this is weird, you know, and didn't think nothing of it, kind of. But as he decided to leave, he went and kind of checked his arm, like, pulled his shirt up and looked, and realized he had, like, 3 or 4 scratches going down his bicep. And he's like, whoa, you know, it was like, I mean, to the point where it was like, I think he said it was like almost like dried blood kind of like thing. And he's like, oh, man, this is, like, and then he kept saying, like, I didn't brush up against anything. And plus he had layers on. You know, and so that really got it. That's what I think that, like, right after that happened is when he called and explained this to me, you know, and it was like, just blew my mind. Like, I think I immediately called Elijah after I got the phone with him. I was like, dude, I think this place is, you know, is our, you know, the real thing, you know, like, finally a case we can go to. you know, because you don't, I mean, as a paranormal investigator, I'm sure you've probably experienced that. I mean, you get people call you for any little thing they think's going on, you know?
Right.
And so you really gotta discern, like, do I go here? I mean, we had very low expectations as far as like, from like residential people calling us cases and stuff. We're like, this never pans out. I mean, we're pretty jaded. I mean, I'll put it, say it like it is.
Right.
You know, we were pretty jaded about it, you know, and then when this, having this fall in our lap is like crazy.
Well, then you go from having, you know, pretty low expectations, and then you hear from a contractor who's pretty shocked and a little shook and had some physical mm-hmm. experiences, and you get in there and then you see for yourself. And now you've gotten to a point where you've done not one but two investigations where you've had some stuff happen. And what brings you to the point now where you're thinking we need to bring some other people in? What was the catalyst for that? What had happened where you thought, you know what, we need to get somebody else in here to verify what it is that we're seeing? Or set that up for me, because I need to know that whole situation.
Okay, so like me and Elijah are kind of the, you know, we kind of talk to each other a lot, and we're like, you know, I think he'll agree. Him and I both kind of had the vision at the same time. And we were like, this could be, because once you find out how big it was, and the mansion, and could be haunted. I think our first conversation was partly like, you know, we kind of had to calm each other down, like, wait a minute, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We were like, wait, now this could be like our, you know, what if this place pans out? It's haunted. This could be like our place. We could like have people come and investigate. We could have people like rent it out. We could like, we immediately start talking that way. So we're kind of like, you know, we tend to be more like business minded like that. So that was a pretty immediate conversation, just because we've investigated so long together.
Mm-hmm.
We know that people, you know, we've paid people, you know, we've paid people to go investigate. So we had already had talks like, look, what if we had our own place? I mean, we could run a place. We could do this. We could do that. You know, just for the sheer fun of it. I mean, like Elijah, we're not getting into it to become millionaires, but we think it's just really cool to have like a location you can get that could be known and people actually come to you to rent it out. You know, so I mean, that was kind of the genesis of it. I mean, we just, you know, immediately just talked about it. Like, man, this could kind of be something, you know, it was, you know, it's become more than we could have imagined so far. I mean, you know, it's still really new to us, but I mean, that's kind of what it was like for me.
So let me jump in on that. Cause I think,
sure.
I think you're asking something different. You're asking when we got to our third investigation where we brought guests with us.
Right. Right.
Are you asking about when we were opening it up for investigators to come in?
Well, were you questioning what it was that you were seeing? Is that why you brought in other investigators, or what was the reasoning for bringing in other investigators? I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah. So for our third investigation, that's when we did the full weekend, and we had different guests come throughout the weekend.
Okay.
So we were so blown away by the level of outward activity. You know, we'll go to places, and sometimes we'll go to a place, nothing will happen. We'll leave, we'll catch no evidence. Sometimes we'll go, nothing will really happen. We'll leave, and we'll have a bunch of audio, you know, EVP, things like that. And once in a while, we'll go and we'll have a couple of personal experiences, and we'll leave thinking, man, that was pretty cool that, you know, we saw a shadow, or we heard a voice, we heard some footsteps or something. This was the first time that we went to a place, and it was, I don't want to say nonstop and, you know, over dramatize it, but it's pretty damn active. From the time you walk in there to the time you leave, you can bet that you're going to have experiences, you know, throughout your whole time in there. So we were so blown away at how active it was. We wanted to bring other people in just to kind of validate that what we were experiencing is really happening.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We wanted people outside of our group. We didn't want to be influencing each other. We didn't want to be kind of that group stuff, group mm-hmm. think stuff we've been talking, you know, we wanted outside opinions, who had never been there before, and multiple. So it wasn't just one, we wanted multiple, just to see what other people thought, just to see if other people had the experiences that we did, and they did. So, you know, if nothing else, it was validating that what we were experiencing, what we were catching there, you know, was the real deal.
And you get them in there, and was the, I got to know, was it hard to keep a poker face? I mean, was it hard for you not to contaminate them?
I don't think so.
Because I got to think, you know, you've been in there a couple of times, you know the lay of the land, and I got to think it's a little bit like, you know, when parents are sitting, you know, by the Christmas tree at Christmas waiting for kids to open gifts, you're sitting there going, oh, I can't wait for them to see what they got. You know,
yeah, that's pretty good.
No, yeah, man. That's
I got to think
it's like a kid on Christmas morning. I mean, there was no hiding the fact that we were excited about what we had found in this location.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, there's not. But at the same time, it wasn't super hard for us not to come and tell them everything we've experienced so far. You know, I think it was easy for us to sit back and kind of be the observer outside the window a little bit and see what they were picking up and catching and experiencing. It was definitely impossible to hold it in once they started sharing stuff with us. We brought our buddy Eric, who's with Atchison Paranormal, kind of the same place. He also does as a tour guide for the Sally House out here.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We brought him along, and man, he got his hair tugged. He got his hair pulled and played with. He got his shirt tugged, and it happened to be in the same area that was a wild hot spot where we were seeing shadows and hearing voices and you know, things like that. So when he came and told us that, I mean, we were blown away. We were excited. We were pumped, and you know, we tore into the present, so to speak.
So you bring in these others. They validate what it is that you've had, you know, happen, and they have experiences as well. Now, at this point, you're pretty much fired up and you're ready to go. And is it full steam ahead at this point? At this point, do you go back to the owner and say, you know what, we're ready for business? Or what is it that... What is the next step at that point? Do you figure that the Beatty Mansion is going to produce every time? Because that's, don't you think that's kind of a lofty goal?
I would say it's a lot. I mean, you just never know. You never know what a place
right.
used to, you know, we believe that if it's something that is an intelligent haunt, it's going to do what it wants to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can't make a dance on command, so we don't, you know, we don't promise anything. But at the same time, I mean, it tends to pay off. Everybody has different, you know, perceives things differently when they investigate, you know, but it's tended to pay off. But I'm sure there will be times people go and it's like, no, because I mean, we've gone to places and been like, this is it, you know, and if that happens, it happens. I don't have any unrealistic expectations about, like, people always catching stuff. I mean, I don't think that's always going to happen. I don't think that's realistic.
So I got to know, what's the history behind the Beatty Mansion that keeps it so active? What exactly happened there that keeps it so stirred up?
Well, it started in the about 1854 is when it was built by Armstrong and Eliza Beatty. Armstrong was the first banker of St. Joe and was the only, still to this day, the only five-time elected mayor of town. What we didn't realize until we started investigating this location is we had always thought that Kansas City was the big hub for the West in the westward expansion, and it wasn't. It was St. Joe. It was a filthy rich town. I mean, there's still mansions everywhere around town because anytime people were expanding west, were going to the west, you think about the Wild West, going to California or Gold Rush, St. Joe is where they would stop and get all their supplies before they headed out. So very wealthy town, very wealthy couple, very well known. Well, they never had any heirs, which is very weird for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Armstrong died in 1878. His wife Eliza died 2 years later in 1880. It was then bought by a local nonprofit group who opened it up as what they called a friend for the, or home for the friendless, which basically meant that they took in anybody, homeless, orphans, things like that. But they were the main place. In that time, there were approximately 80 brothels in St. Joe. So the brothel business was doing well there. So they would take in prostitutes that would become pregnant via their line of work, obviously, single unwed mothers, and they take them in there. So it served as that home for several years. It then went on to be the memorial home for the aged, so a retirement home, an old folks home, and it lasted that for 100 years. And then it sat empty a few years, and then this guy bought it and started trying to renovate it. So that doesn't sound like a very ominous history. Now, here's where the weird stuff happens. We definitely are getting Armstrong and Eliza are two of the most prevalent spirits in the house. They made it very clear. They've told us their names time and again. What's very weird to us is, as we researched, we found that Armstrong, when he died, he fell unconscious on a Tuesday, was dead on Thursday. Hmm. Prior to Tuesday, he was in perfect health. Nothing wrong with the guy. Fell unconscious on Tuesday, died 2 days later on Thursday. Never regained consciousness. Died. The doctors labeled it, I'm having a total brain fart.
Cholera.
Help me out. Cholera.
Cholera. Yeah,
I can't think of words tonight. It's been a long day. The That's doctor okay. labeled it and diagnosed him as dying from cholera. Well, we thought that was suspicious. You know, cholera, that's not some big mysterious disease. When people got cholera, they didn't just all of a sudden fall unconscious and drop dead. I mean, it was progressive disease mm-hmm. that involved a little more sickness. So we dug in a little bit more and found out that the same symptoms of cholera mimics – looks exactly the same as strychnine poison.
Hmm.
So, I mean, we can't say one way or another. We've got nothing to back it up, but it's mysterious. Doctor labeled it cholera. It can be mistaken as poisoning. The guy just all of a sudden falls unconscious one day and is dead 2 days later. Doesn't make sense. A few other, we're kind of piecing puzzles together here and there. A few other things that are just strange to us are they were a prominent couple in town. We've researched other mansions and homes in the city that, you know, prominent couples, and you can find a plethora of information all over the place about husband, wife, children, family, tons of research. When we start investigating Armstrong and Eliza, I mean, we can find anything, almost anything you want to find about Armstrong. Not one single iota of information about Eliza. Why would that be? That's weird. Why would that be? There's still a lot more research to be done, and we're hoping as more groups come and investigate, we can start corroborating evidence that gets caught there and see if we can, you know, add a few more pieces to the puzzle.
Wow. All right. Well, that definitely interesting indeed. It's interesting that house is that active, and it continues to be that active. You know, generally, and you guys know from the amount of investigating you've done, when you have some sort of haunting that is that active, you've got an elemental spirit of some sort, or you've got some sort of spirit that's malevolent or something that kind of drives that haunting to a higher level. But it's interesting that, or you've had some sort of terrible event that's happened on that property, like a war or something to that effect, or some sort of an atrocity that keeps that, in kind of perpetual motion that keeps that haunting going. But Yeah. It's interesting that that just kind of sits there. Have you ever checked out to see if maybe there's some ley lines or something there that sits there? I mean, you mentioned that there's water around there, that there's, didn't you say there's a river or something in back of there?
There's a river.
There's a river. And also what's interesting is I was actually looking up stuff. Every once in a while I'll look up, you know, the area, or I'll kind of like Google the, you know, the mansion or whatever, and when I'm getting ready to talk about it a little bit. And it's, I've read this before, but I'm like, this is interesting. It's surrounded by a wall. It's surrounded, the wall is limestone.
Ah, okay.
Yep. And so if you watched, you know, and I've learned this just from, you know, watching the show, like most other people. Mm-hmm. But limestone is, no, you know, I guess is known as a conductor.
Yeah. Yep.
For like paranormal, for like, you know, what do you want to call it? And so I thought that's interesting because a lot of places that are notoriously haunted, there's limestone around, like in old jails or. Limestone, you know, I live right next to an old jail in Independence, Missouri, and it's just limestone cells. You know, Beatty Mansion, limestone wall. His family hotel, I think, sits on limestone or something like that, I think.
Yeah.
So it's like there's too many links to limestone for it to be a coincidence, I think. You know, so I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool, interesting to throw in there.
Very interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of different factors there that kind of keep that energy moving, that's for sure.
Well, Tim, this is part of the thing that's, I think, is fun for us right now, is there's still a lot of questions. We're still researching. We're still in the early phases. So who in the hell knows what's in that house or what's happened in that house or, you know, what ground that house sits on? All of those things are still mysteries are waiting to unravel. So, you know, we know – I can't even really put a number to it, but let's say we know 10% of the information there is to know about that place. We're still on the ground level. All we know, it's got this cool history. It's got this couple. It was, you know, it's had so many people in and out of it. It's had such a prominence to the town, and it's ridiculously haunted. So that's kind of the foundation that's been laid right now, and we're working on it. So hopefully in the months and years to come, we'll be able to have a little better idea.
Now, I see, too, that the Tennessee Wraith Chasers are coming in to do some sort of an event in May as well. Is that?
They are, yeah, yeah. So, again, this place is already starting to get that reputation. The guys, Tennessee Wraith Chasers, have heard about the place. They've seen pictures of the place. They've heard evidence that's been captured at the place. They're absolutely enamored with it so far. So they contacted us and wanted to set up an event and come out and check the place out. So that is on May 26th. I believe it's that Saturday is when the event's happening. And they're coming out. They're going to do a, you know, Q&A, meet and greet, and then an overnight investigation. And they're only selling a handful of tickets. They want it to be more of an intimate, you know, kind of VIP type experience. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely. And you know, we have to give credit to, you know, there's another group, kind of a shout out, another group that helped get the Wraith Chaser guys, CWC guys in there. They're close personal friends with another group that's located in St. Louis, Missouri. They're Three Girls in the Dark. They're friends with them, so they really helped us a lot as far as, you know, contacting the guys and getting them to come out and do this thing. And they're actually going to be there, too, on that date. So you get Apex Paranormal, you get TWC, and you get Three Girls in the Dark there the same weekend. So that's kind of cool. We're excited for that.
Okay.
It's worth coming just to meet Sean and Elijah, I think.
I think it is. Yeah. I see Tennessee Wraith who? I would rather come out and meet John and Elijah. Yeah, that should be your number one goal. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I hear Tennessee doesn't really have much going on anyways. I mean, their football team is crap. I mean, you know, let's face it.
I'm not even going down that road.
Well, they're good enough to keep cheap. That's all that matters, I guess.
You know what, Sean? let me throw this out there, and sure. I hate to be a tease. I was hoping we'd be able to be more transparent by the time we got on the show with you guys, but we did have a major paranormal show already come out and film there. So I know some of the things that they've caught. I've been, not been able to see it and heard it yet. So I'm dying for this episode to air so we can see what their experiences were. They had some pretty incredible things to say about the place. And unfortunately, they said we can't mention anything until they announce the the season premiere or whatever in the lineup.
And that's fair.
But it'll be – but it will be on a big show. The original timeline was March or April is when it should air. So keep an eye out for that.
So let me ask you this then, ask you both this. What are the hopes then with after Beatty Mansion has been featured on this program and even down the line, let's say by the end of 2018, what are you hoping to do with the property? Not necessarily with Apex Paranormal, but what are you hoping to do with Beatty Mansion? And are you hoping to make it more of a learning ground for paranormal teams? Are you hoping to expand the reputation of the property? Are you, what are you hoping to do with it in the end?
Well, at this point, sorry, Sean, I'm going to steal this one too. At this point, I don't think we really have necessarily firm plans or goals or anything like that set out. We're kind of enjoying the ride. It's a place that we absolutely love and we want to get it out there. We want to share it with other people. So I guess the hope is that we can, you know, we continue to get groups that come in and we kind of see it as every group that comes in is adding to that pot of knowledge or that pot of evidence. And so that's a really exciting part for us. Of course, there's always the business side, like Sean had mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with groups coming in, that generates a little revenue. And the owner has said that any revenue that's generated, he wants to put right back into it. So seeing this incredible building, you know, start getting through some restorations also and be able to kind of preserve that history as we're continuing to learn it, I think is definitely a big part of what we're wanting to do or we're hoping will happen.
Besides the one historical piece you mentioned, is there any other historical pieces you're looking to solve? And that maybe another group could come in and help you with? As far as the Beatty Mansion?
I would say yes. I mean it's other than we're still learning about Armstrong and Eliza, we're still learning about who was there and what happened, you know, when it was a home for the friendless, when it was a home for the aged. It's kind of a blank slate. We don't even know what we don't know. At this point, we know what we've been able to find in the last several months as we've been going. It's only been really, we investigated last year. Very first time was March. So it's not even had people looking into it for a year yet. And it was just us up until last September, Sean. I think is when it first opened and we started allowing other groups to come in also. So it's brand new.
Yeah, this is our first full year of operation.
The apexparanormal.com is the website, and then also if people want to if they have any questions or need assistance from you, theapexparanormal@gmail.com. how else can people get a hold of you if they want to book the Beatty Mansion to investigate?
The easiest way is Beatty Mansion. We now have a Facebook page, so it's facebook.com/Beatty Mansion. And then there's also a website that's got a little bit more of, you know, history information. And anytime a group comes in and puts some evidence out or puts a video out, we get their permission so far, and we put it up on the website so you can kind of see some of those videos. I think they're all YouTube videos at this point, to see some of the evidence and experiences that people have had there. So that website is Beatty, Beatty Mansion. Weebly.com. So BeattyMansion.weebly.com.
All right. Guys, thanks for joining us tonight. Elijah Buchholz and Sean Holland of Apex Paranormal. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it, man.
It's been awesome.
Well, thank you both. Tomorrow night it's Chad Lewis, and we will be talking about The Most Gruesome Hauntings in the Midwest. Again, Chad Lewis is our guest tomorrow night here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This has been Beyond the Darkness.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.